Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Insulin sensitivity.
Always
Stop it.
They don't know your body, only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
On the radio.
30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys in line.
Join me on the podcast today. You can find him over at Fantrax. Also newly on the Call Up podcast, which is over at Triple Play, which I've guest appeared on the YouTube version of that, I think in the off season. He is Michael Richards. You can find him on Twitter at MPRichards1981. Mike, are you a little bit older than me? I didn't realize that. Michael, what's up, dude?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me on. Actually, no one has asked me about the numbers at the end of my name yet, if it was my birth date or not.
It has to be.
So I have to keep it a secret for now.
I mean, it has to be. I'm always obsessed with those things when I see I still don't understand it. My co-host over on Fantasy Pros, Pizapia, he's Joe Pizapia 17. I think I've given him crap about it. I don't even recall what the answer is on why there's numbers at the end, but yours is relatively clear. But you can follow him over there. Lots of good prospect stuff. Tweets out there. You do a good job of breaking down some of the hot guys that are performing at really good levels. You'll put some tweets out about them with some good breakdowns. And of course, you have got some great stuff over at Fantrax. So kind of new, we were talking off air, you're newer in the world of podcasting, but you've been doing some prospect writing for a bit over at Fantrax, correct?
Yeah, I've been writing at Fantrax since probably January. Worked my way there, writing for about a year at smaller sites.
I was about to say, you were doing stuff way before Fantrax. I remember seeing you around.
I started July of 2020 is when I really got it started.
I feel like it was longer. Michael, I feel like you've been around quite a bit longer. And what is the setup over on the Call Up that you're doing as far as podcasts? Are you a third, fourth mic? What's the brand?
Yeah, it's basically David Mendelson, Mendy, and he's the host. And then we have 3 guys. We kind of rotate. Sometimes we do all 4 of us. Sometimes it's 3 of us. And I'm just kind of one of the guys who focuses. We have a personality type of guy, and then I'm kind of the prospect guy that's sticking to the numbers and talking about the scouting grades and stuff like that. We got a good mix of people over there.
So you got like a brand. Okay. So you got like here's the funny guy, here's the host guy, here's the analysis guy. I'm curious, since you're kind of relatively new to it, Michael, what got you into going down this route? It's a pretty big space now, much bigger space than when I started doing any of it. And I was a newer person in a space that was even smaller of people. And it's just, it is exploded into something quite different than my interjecting into it than where it's at now. And I'm curious at, what harpened it. Some people have access to games, they get out there and they get excited seeing people in person. It's Dynasty, it's the prospect. I'm just curious at what pushed you to be to break down prospects from fantasy and just real life stuff.
That's a good question. I played fantasy for a long time, redraft leagues and stuff before I ever got into prospects, and then dynasty leagues when they were pretty new, I started getting more into that. I got really excited about finding prospects before my league mates, and I didn't really have to play at a high level against my home league type stuff, so I didn't really dig into the analysis of it that much until basically, I jumped into this because the world got flipped upside down in early 2020. And I said to myself, I don't know what's going on. And I want to do something that I love with my life. And so like, I love baseball. And I figured, like, there's so many smart fantasy people out there. Maybe I'll jump into the prospect analysis side of it and really see what I can do there. And it's just kind of, I've just kind of ran with it. And I still have my foot in the fantasy side of it. I still enjoy improving on that level. But I've learned a lot in the last year and a half with prospects, even from when I first started.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't actually think about what could have come up from the pandemic and people being home. And it's actually a really interesting time to dive into it when there is none, when there was no minor league season and you could only really kind of like come back to it or very little information. That's good stuff. I mean, and you've definitely, you've helped find your niche and you've got some good stuff out there. You're a great follow on Twitter and I highly suggest people do it. And you can check out, like I said, the stuff on Fantrax and over on The Call Up. Oh, Michael, let's talk some stuff. Let's talk about prospects. We're going to go through and I've got a litany of guys to talk about, some big names, some smaller names, names we probably talked about in recent podcasts, and I think guys that are kind of maybe dominating the space as far as like really solid production. I think these are guys that are in that you got to put a focus on. But I've got a couple preseason questions I want to ask you. And first up is, what prospect or prospects, if you got a couple, did you feel passionate about, or I could say like they were your guys that you feel very vindicated about this year, that you think have a hit? If there's a guy or two that you have really jumped in and attached yourself to and has had success as far, I guess you would call it wins, some wins that you've had so far this year.
Okay, so I got a couple guys, actually. The first guy is Miguel Vargas from the Dodgers. I was actually quite high on him. Yeah, I got him in some industry drafts in the preseason. And, you know, I kind of viewed him as a pretty obvious, like, top 30 type prospect even at that time, and I mean I see him more in like the top 20 easy at this point. So he's the first guy. Also, I should give credit to James Anderson because he's the original one who mentioned Michael Harris to me. He's another one that I feel vindicated on because I bought into that, and I feel like he's going to be a big riser, another guy who's going to be a top prospect soon, I think.
Miguel Vargas too, I just want to throw out. Miguel Vargas is one. My only struggle with him right now is like, you just want to keep going up. You just want to keep putting him higher. And you start to get into this space where you're looking at the guys and you're just like, he literally pushes, in my mind, he pushes the boundaries of value where it's like, dude, like, I think he might be on par. I think he's as close to Jordan Walker as you can go. And I'm crazy high on Jordan Walker. I got Jordan Walker inside the top 20. There's something that keeps me off, but because then you start looking, you're like, you know, Miguel Vargas or Brady House, Miguel Vargas or Josh Young. Like, I think he is in that conversation.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In this league.
Somebody royally forked up. Somebody forked up. Why can't I say fork?
If you're trying to curse, you can't hear.
Full shirt.
Holy mother forking shirt boss.
The other one I'd mentioned was Michael Harris. I just think there's a lot like there, like the full skill set kind of coming to fruition there.
But he's gotten bigger too. He's clearly added muscle.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find a little lower down. I'd say I was quite high. I'll stick with those two right now. I mean,
okay, those are good. Well, those are good ones because now we got to bring you back down to earth. And what prospects do you think you got wrong so far? You know, we're now in the space where I feel like we can maybe kind of have these conversations a little bit. It's still not enough. And yeah, at the end of the day, we could probably tell ourselves it's never enough. You know, like it could be in August and be like, the sample size is not enough because this guy moved from this level to this level. Like, we can always use that as an excuse. And sometimes it's an excuse. I don't feel it as an excuse, but I think it is excusing in my brain sometimes when I want to make big pushes. So, but I do say, like, after a month, like, we're getting a better scope. So it is a better place. So now that we are a month into, you know, significance of minor leagues and stuff like that, we can start to take a look and be like, okay, this is who I feel kind of vindicated about. But where do you think you got wrong? And this could be, you know, most likely this is like someone you probably didn't like that has exploded, or you were kind of against the industry on, or something like that. Where do you think you've gotten wrong so far early on?
Well, really quickly, I'll stick to the top. The guy that I feel like I overrated was Brennan Davis for the Cubs. I just had him up there with the elite of the elite. And even though I still like him, I think that was premature. I think it was more about his upside than his actual production. So he's someone that I would bump down at this point. But outside of him, I mean, Luis Matos is someone that I was super high on coming into the season. And he has not played up to that at this point. I mean, obviously, like you said, all these guys are players who could, you know, they could go on a tear in the next month and it all looks different. So I still like them, but for how high I was on these two players specifically, like I had them both in my top 20 in the preseason.
Yeah, I feel like those are two guys that it's interesting you pick them. I feel like those are two guys that are going to work this out. Like Matos's production versus valuation needs to adjust a little bit. Like I fell in love seeing him when he did a signing with my buddy Dennis. And I was just standing like right next to him and it was like, oh my God, like when did you get this big? Cause I remember you saw him in Complex in like 2019. And this was a completely different body type. It was a completely different looking player. Really fascinating to see. And you see big hard hit numbers and he can run and he's just having a bad early go. So from a valuation standpoint, I think there's a change. I probably personally wouldn't highlight him like in my eyes, because I think I'm with you. I think like anybody that knows me or knows my ranks would be like, oh yeah, well, you had him there too. I wouldn't take an L. I wouldn't be taking an L on Luis Matos right now. I think there's other guys I could take an L on. That would not be one that I would be standing here taking an L on Luis Matos, but I get it. And Brennan Davis is kind of tough as well. And then the last one, and we're going to get into some highlights. Give me a prospect that you want to buy right now, which probably indicates maybe the market has not caught up or maybe they're underperforming, and someone you would like to sell, which is most likely the inverse of that.
Okay, one guy I like to buy right now is Evan Carter for the Rangers. I do a lot of things, you know, when I'm looking through stats. I've heard you talk about it too, filtering players by different categories and different stats. And he's a standout to me as a 19-year-old in high A. He may be the youngest player in the league, definitely playing the best for his age. So he's someone that I'm targeting in a lot of leagues. I like his hit tool and his speed as well. And I think he has the size to develop power. And the Rangers
definitely
like
does.
They're moving him quickly. He missed a lot of time last year too. So, and they didn't put him back in low A. They just bumped him right up. So, great dynasty target in my opinion. As far as sell low or what was the other?
Someone you would sell. Someone you would sell on, whether they are performing at a high level that you don't buy, or you think the rug is about to be pulled from under them, something in that respect. There's a lot of big performances right now. There's a lot of high performances on players that became pop-ups that, and really that kind of comes around. Like I don't even want to throw out names because then it's going to seem like I'm trying to say sell on those guys. Cause I do have guys in my mind. Is there anybody you can think of?
Right off the top of my head, Nolan Gorman. I believe people are too high on him.
Ooh, not because he boo. Doesn't have a lot of height.
And I've heard you like him. I do. You like him. But and I do too. His ability to produce at age 21 in AAA is notable. But he's still striking out over 30, 34, 35% of the time.
No.
I think he would struggle to make enough contact in the major leagues if he were to come up right now. And people are calling for him. I think there's a lot of hype with him right now. And I think you could get something good for him if you traded to like a real believer.
I mean, the best time to trade these guys is, well, I mean, it's kind of twofold. It's obviously when the it's when the player is performing at like the biggest peak performance, all time crazy level, and or when they're performing well right before the majors. Gorman hit a homer today. I was watching the game. Unreal matchup this morning, Memphis Norfolk, of like Grayson Rodriguez with Adley, and then you've got Matt Liberatore and Gorman, and DeYoung was DHing, and Gorman hit a bomb, I think, I was watching in the game. And that's probably the biggest reason why he hasn't been called up, is because of the strikeout. Like, what else can you do? There's only two things you can put out there. There's pretty big strikeout numbers and manipulation. You know, there's a, whatever the manipulation is going on with them, where they're going to give Edmundo Sosa or something like that. You know what? From a strategic standpoint, I don't disagree with you. I do think Nolan Gorman's going to be a valuable asset, but I think any of these guys have told you the story of the best of the best of the greatest can go through massive struggles. Julio, Bobby Witt, Spencer Torkelson. Now you throw on a guy that's got some strikeout issues and tendencies. Nolan Gorman could have some struggles. So I'm not as crazy aggressive on redraft, but from a long-term dynasty perspective, I mean, since in high school, he has elite power. And if he does continue, the thing that's so positive is he's so young at AAA and he's dominating at like a really good batting average clip. This isn't a guy that's hitting like 260 with all the bombs or anything. He's hitting over 300. And he's striking out a little bit of an issue at second base, which makes him so valuable. So kind of both sides. I don't think you're incorrect in that the nature of his value might not ever be as high. He's on the precipice of coming up. He's hitting 300, lots of bombs. This might be the peak Nolan Gorman. It's just if he Nolan Gorman's how he is right now at the major league level, then he's going to far surpass what you're going to get if he does. But the strikeout numbers are kind of concerning. So there's some good names.
Throw a caveat in there. Like I am a big believer in buying low and selling high in dynasty and that sort of stuff. If I'm a believer in Gorman, like you appear to be, and I am to a certain degree too, I do think he's going to be a big time slugger in the majors once he figures it out. I'm selling him now. I'm expecting him to struggle when he comes up, and I'm buying him back at that point for a discount.
Yeah, and that is a strategy of many and not of all, and that is why the conversation around I get weird about stuff in my comment. I always laugh at like the people that always still listen to the show because I wonder what they must think when they listen to my show versus, you know, some of the others, because I also get very theory about things, and I don't know if there's a ton of theory about it, but sometimes I just get into the weeds about things. But that's why the conversation, like an overarching conversation around prospects, I think is so interesting, because nothing is one and the same. As in major baseball, fantasy baseball, of like, you know, oh, head to head, or I play points and blah, blah, blah. Take that out of it. Take out the formats that you play in, but now start to get in to the sizes of the leagues and what type of dynasty or keeper and how many you keep. Are there contracts? And then you start talking into philosophies and roster philosophies and constructions, and that's what this is about. There are people, and it is a philosophy that prospects are movable assets. And you, just like stocks, you sell high and you buy low, and that's how they want to move them. And they're not really even necessarily thinking, they don't want to, and it kind of sounds like how you're talking about it, is many people don't want to prospect in, how am I trying to say this? They don't want to do prospects in a predictive way. They want proven assets. So people are moving and churning and burning, and they are buying guys that they have track records, that they know what they're getting into, regardless of how much they hoard them.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey,
in this league.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Huh?
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Not me. Not me.
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Not me.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Not me.
And that's kind of, it sounds like that's kind of the same similar idea. I don't know if you do that in a lot of your leagues, though. Do you find yourself picking and choosing, or are like all prospects on the table for you at all times?
No. Well, I should say, when I came into this stuff in 2020, I was huge into prospects and stashing upside and all that sort of stuff. And just kind of, I've changed my approach based on playing against the other industry people. I've saw what the winners did and saw what worked. And I know that the best way for me to play is to sell them, is, you know, for proven assets, for major league talent, for depth like that, that can help me win now. And I can continue to find the pop-up prospects to replenish my system.
Yeah.
So like playing fantasy and prospect analysis are two different things. That's something I've learned. Like the people who can meld them together are the best, but like for me to work, to function perfectly, I almost have to keep prospects out of the fantasy. Like I don't have a lot of prospects on my redraft teams. I have guys, I'm trying to get guys who have proven it before and get me plate appearances and get me stats. And like, I'll get the prospects later. But I used to get burned by that. That's why I changed it. Because I was waiting for the upside. I was waiting for stashing the CJ Abrams and the O'Neal Cruz and everyone else. And I'd lose to the players who weren't doing it.
Yeah, see, it's interesting because I think I used to be much more hoardy. How I tend to work right now is the top players, you're just not going to find. I do this at nauseam. I hate the like five for this guy. I'm not that type of trader. The elite players are impossible for me to trade in valuation because there's a reason I get them at elite levels. There's a reason I've put them there because I don't just necessarily think it's hype. I think there is future crazy high upside. They don't all work. You know, Kelnick doesn't feel like he's working right now. There's plenty that don't, but there's plenty that do. Look at Wander Franco. Look at all of the gajillion trades that people would have been like, oh, trade Wander Franco. I mean, I think about the Wander Kelnick debate, how hilarious those are right now. But like, oh, you know, I can get all of this for Wander. Right now, there's a legitimate conversation of Wander being a redraft top shortstop, the overall shortstop in redraft right now, not just in Dynasty. So they do work out. It's a dangerous game, but I am very strict and very, you have to blow me away with the top guys, but I'm very, very loose and run and gun with prospects usually outside the top 20, you know, and people will be like, "Ooh, would you?" I move them. Not afraid. Even guys that I like.
That's exactly how I do it. I have a top tier of just the elite that I think are future stars potentially. And they cost a lot to get from me. Everyone else, I'll move for whatever pieces I need.
Yeah, and you jump on stuff. You jump on the guys where you have to. It's an interesting conversation there. It's an interesting take on it. Speaking of these prospects, let's talk about some interesting guys. And we were actually just talking about K percentages and K rates with Nolan Gorman. There's a fear. This prospect, I think, is polarizing on multiple aspects. And I don't know if we've given a ton of conversation to him early on in the season. He had everybody's eye within the first month. Things have cooled a little bit. There are some huge positives and some huge negatives. And we're actually going to spend time talking about two of these guys from the most recent draft class. Khalil Watson. Khalil Watson started the season hitting 500, well over 300-400. He was crushing some bombs. He was living up to the potential of what anyone would sell of why he could be one of the top first-year player guys. I was team Khalil Watson pre-draft. I was one or two, I don't remember. I had him one or two overall, of overall guys of my of the shortstop group. Stupidly, I had Brady House kind of near the bottom, not even in the same tier necessarily, and loved Jordan Lawler at the top. And Khalil Watson. And then I kind of got weirded out by the Marlins and their development and stuff like that and moved off a little bit. And he absolutely popped. He's currently sitting on the positive side, 6 homers, 7 stolen bases as a 19-year-old in A-ball. Great. 24 RBI in 25 games. I mean, we're talking 100 RBI season from, you know, what I think some people might be critical of, like a 5'9", 180 shortstop, but he has an incredible bat speed. He has an incredible bat path to the ball. But the signs and why short sample sizes can be dangerous, of course, have shown us some worrisome signs. His average has gone down to 257, which isn't the most ridiculous thing. He's still slugging over 500. He's got a 400 BABIP, which is a little worrisome, but that ain't the thing, Michael. A 42% K percentage, which he has been rocking in the 40s for some time now, with an only 5% walk rate. It is extreme. You talk about Brennan Davis. Khalil Watson is very Brennan Davis like right now, where the potential is through the freaking roof. Of all these shortstops, I mean, I think everybody argued with me on Jordan Lawler. We're going to talk about him in a second. Jordan Lawler is stealing at quite the clip right now, but Khalil Watson represents that five-tool magnificence. You see the upside through the freaking roof, but you also have a glaring warning sign in front of you, and it feels very Brennan Davis-like, and he's getting a lot of the early love. So I'm really curious at your take on both the positive and negative about Khalil Watson, because I have not jumped off because of the K rate yet. I want to monitor it a little bit longer, but you can't ignore it. So what is your take on Khalil Watson on both sides?
Well, first I'll say, I think you did a great job breaking it down there. I mean, the fantasy potential is clear, like the at least four categories. You know, the K percentage is the one glaring elephant in the room. And obviously he's going to have to clean that up. Like, he's not going to be able to hit upper level pitching, never mind major league pitching, if that becomes a norm. But I just don't think that's really who he is. I mean, that's my take on him. I'm definitely not giving up on him. It's something to monitor, as you said. But I was one of the people who had Khalil Watson number one in the first year player draft.
Okay.
I had Jordan Lawler number two, but I've flip flopped those guys at this point. It was more about Marcelo Mayer. I didn't trust the non speed. I didn't understand why people would rank a guy with minimal speed as an 18-year-old number one overall, but that's a different story. Basically, Khalil Watson does everything I like in a fantasy prospect. The only thing that's glaring is that K percentage and low walk percentage right now, which could just be a small sample size. But that's where I'm at with him. I mean, he's someone that I would view as a buy low if people are dropping him down too far on lists.
From a valuation standpoint, I mean, also breaking down, he had a really good April, and something we want to always be careful about. You know, I think back to Brujan, but he hit 294, he had five homers, and he had a massive strikeout rate. This month, still early, but we're a third of the way through, the contact is completely decimated, but the strikeout rate is the same. And the stolen bases are staying relatively the same, even though he's not getting on base. So he's showing kind of that, I've always called it the Bryce Harper tangible, where, you know, you're not making an impact with your bat. When you get on base, you're making an impact on the bases. And he had multiple years where he would kind of intertwine between that, where he's like, he's not hitting as well, so he's running a whole bunch more. Watson is showing some of that, but he's got one extra base hit so far this month. He is hitting .182. I was looking at that incorrectly. He has... I'm right. One extra base hit, six hits the entire month, hitting .182, but 14 strikeouts and 33 at bats. So you say this isn't the guy that he necessarily is. Benefit of the doubt, you believe the K percentage is going to drop, and he is valued in what? Is he currently a top 40 prospect to you?
No, I wouldn't put someone with a 42% K percentage in A ball as a top 40 prospect.
Proximity definitely is coming into effect here.
Yeah, proximity. I mean, he could be, if he figures it out, he could be number one overall down the line. Like, that's the kind of upside I think he has. But at this very moment, there are more than 40 prospects I value over him.
Yeah, and see, that is always the dangerous, and that's the rub right there of current production versus future value. And that is also how so many different people rank and evaluate prospects differ. And it's such a different game. And it's a hard thing to try to cipher through sometimes, because I think there are a lot of people, right and wrong, I think there's different levels of it, where there are people that are only focused on the production now. And I think there's a mixture. And then there's people that are only focused on the future. If you're looking at future only, Khalil Watson might be a top 10 guy right now, but that's why I think you have to have a balance. I do have him as a top 40 prospect. And I'll tell you though, if this month continues at this same rate, it is something you're going to have to look at, because he's not going to be able to jump levels, and the strikeout, he's not showing those signs yet that you do have to make some of those changes. Khalil, I'm going to ask you a couple. Khalil Watson, or Zach Veen. Pick a side.
I still would go with Khalil Watson long term.
Okay.
With those two, because I believe in the speed more.
Khalil Watson or Ellie De La Cruz?
Also Watson still. Okay. I mean, I love
your face was magical on that one. I think I love asking Ellie De La Cruz questions because it just pains everybody to be like, oh, like I liked that. But so you go Watson over Ellie.
Yeah, I would rank him higher today. Yeah.
Okay. I will tell you one person that I would be shocked if anybody has. I shouldn't be shocked.
Want to try a free sample of Berry Pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Never eat after 7 p.m.
Always
Stop it.
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
2 ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Shouldn't say that. Never be shocked about anything. But I would say many more people are with me now, and I would be surprised if the majority had Watson over Jordan Lawler at this point, who is, I think, a notch bit older. Absolutely destroying and dominating A ball right now. Visalia, he shouldn't be there much longer. I mean, we're almost at 100 at bats right now. He is completely dominating from top to bottom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, fellas, here's how it works. $15 for a...
In this league.
What's this?
In this league.
If you have to ask, big man, you can't afford it.
So, Jordan Lawler. Jordan Lawler, probably someone I'm going to guess you're valuing over Khalil Watson at this point, but maybe I'm wrong. But talk to me about your impression on the early run of Lawler.
Yeah, again, you broke it down really great there. He was someone that stood out to me from a scouting grade when I just looked at all those shortstops in the draft. If I was just going off of that, he would have been number one for me. So when I look at what he's done this year and all the stats, all the advanced stats and metrics, there's just nothing to pick out that's bad. He basically looks like the perfect fantasy prospect as far as what I would want to see from a 19-year-old in A-ball. And you got to remember, too, he had 6 plate appearances in the Complex League last year. So he's doing this coming off of, you know, missing a bunch of time. So he's just been dropped from high school, missed a year, and now he's destroying A-ball.
You know what's interesting too?
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm sorry. Continue. I'll go.
I was just saying. I think he's definitely one of those guys that's going to be really high on lists and will be viewed as one of those kind of elite top tier guys that we don't want to trade.
Yeah, and it's incredible. You have to admit it is incredible how much the big 4 shortstops have really produced. Like, it's really incredible. Like, usually you're like, all right, who is this guy? Complete suck and lose and but it's not. You know, Mayer's fine. He's hitting over 300. Fine. Watson, big counting stats numbers, strikeout worries, but still they're kind of outweighing each other. Brady House looks like a beast. And Jordan Lawler is the most statistically successful, and I would say looking the most well-rounded of any of them, because everybody was picking on Lawler, like, oh, Mayer's so much this, strikeout issues with Lawler. He's answering all those questions. Again, a little bit more advanced for those low levels. But what was interesting about Lawler also was he was not healthy to the point he didn't really do much of spring training. All the guys were there. Corbin Carroll had been there since like January. Lawler had as well. They were working together, which probably tells you some stuff. Lawler and Carroll and Christian Robinson all working together a whole bunch. But he wasn't in these workouts. They would run day-to-day practices. They would run live BP sessions, simulated games. Lawler didn't really partake in much of any of that stuff. He did do some BP, and then he missed the first half of extended spring training, or I'm sorry, minor league spring training. And then his first run was like March 20th or something like that, where he actually got into games. I think that's about right. I'm saying it. And he only got in a handful of games, of competitive games. And then he's come out and he's absolutely dominated. I'm just impressed. I feel a little bit vindicated. I hope he continues it on. And I think he's a massively valuable prospect. So let me ask you, Jordan Lawler or Marcelo Mayer?
Oh, Lawler, it's easy for me. I had Lawler ahead of Mayer during the first year player draft stuff.
Okay, so you're with me. Okay, so let me push you then. Lawler or Cruz?
O'Neill Cruz?
O'Neill Cruz. Yeah, apologies. O'Neill Cruz or Jordan Lawler?
I'll give the edge to O'Neill Cruz there. Just the
okay, proximity.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing. But also, he's got all those tools to go with it.
Lawler or... Ooh, there's something I want to ask you, but I think it's too much. Lawler or Christian Hernandez?
Lawler.
Okay, so I think we can pick apart also. Proximity definitely has its space with you. I feel like proximity definitely plays a good role in some of the decision-making, and that's probably good for everybody to know. Massively impressed with Lawler. I think he's had one of the more impressive hitting performances early on in the season. But maybe I got to give it up because I feel like my Arizona Fall League carried over. And that's always what's dangerous. And I try to acknowledge that stuff. I feel like some of my Arizona Fall League thoughts carried a little too far in. And, you know, my boy Nate, who was on last week, the last week's show, you know, he's always been an Ezekiel Tovar guy. And I love the top 100 take. When we got into the top 50, I was like, oh man, we're really getting there. But I'm not sure there has been an early season complete performance more impressive than Ezekiel Tovar. If you look at everybody, Nolan Gorman is massively impressive. I think Lawler is up near the top of the list. But Tovar at 20 years old at AA, 6 homers, 11 stolen bases, a sub 20 K percentage, his walk percentage is in the double digits. I think he's a top 20 WRC plus in the league. I had pulled this up and then I went away from it, but I believe inside the top 30, let me see if this is correct. 1, 2, 3, 4. I think there are 4, 5 players. Is this correct? 4 or 5 players. we'll go with 4. Yeah, I think it is. Here, I see it now. There are 4 players that are 20 years old or younger inside the top 30 of WRC plus, which is, you know, taking a look at that league average. And Tovar is at the highest level of all of those players. So think about that. You have Milan Tolentino with the Guardians, who's 20 years old. He's at A ball. He's playing great right now. He's got the same walk and strikeout percentage, 177 WRC plus. You have got Alex Ramirez, who I'm absolutely infatuated with the Mets, who is 19 years old at A ball, who has a bad walk percentage, but not a bad strikeout percentage, a 184 WRC plus. He's a 3-4-5 guy. The top guy is someone we're going to talk about here in a little bit, Pete Crow Armstrong at A ball, who has got a 189 WRC plus, 3-4-5, under 20% K percentage. Then you have freaking Ezekiel Tovar, who is 20th overall in WRC plus at AA. That is, there's not a lot. I think total 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 9 players at AA or higher than him. And the youngest is 22 years old. Everybody is 24 or higher. So that's a lot of stuff I just threw out there. To give credit to the people that love Tovar, body looks like it's improved a little bit. He's just one of those guys in this world of guys like Corbin Carroll who don't have this body that feel homerish. He just makes such good decisions. He's making them. Obviously, the Arizona Fall League probably carried over a lot of stuff. I think he was the youngest guy that he was here. He's carried a lot of those things over in here. He's making better decisions. He's maximizing his power. He's stealing bases. He's become one of, he's one of the most valuable hitters in the minor leagues right now. So I understand from a overall value standpoint, or just from a this dude is hot standpoint, where you could go into him being like a top 50-ish type of player. So talk to me about your feelings with Ezekiel Tovar.
Well, Tovar was someone that I actually kind of liked a little bit coming into the season. I followed him in high A last year, and you know, he showed a good ability to steal bases, much better than his scouting grades indicate. So I just had him on my radar coming in this year. I've been very impressed. Like you said, the Arizona Fall League, he had over 900 OPS in spring training, I believe, you know, for whatever that means, but it's still against good competition, and he's carried it right up to double A. And like you said, I do a lot of stuff with age versus level. It sounds like you do as well. 20-year-olds, shortstops with plus hit tools, developing power that have speed in double A are just rare. They're usually all top prospects. If you stack him up in his numbers right now against the other guys in double A, you know, that are good prospects too, he, like Luvier Peguero, for example, or whoever it may be, you can make a case for Tovar over all of them. So I say all of that stuff to say, like, I do think he's going to be a top 50 prospect. Whether it's right or wrong, I think that's how it's going to go. And to some people, I think there's a real argument you can make for putting him over Zach Veen in the Rockies organization.
Yeah, I think so too. I watched Zach a little bit, and I felt like a little bit better about his swing. Big stolen base markers. I don't think that's a disagreement whatsoever. You know, I have him inside my top 100, and I had somebody ask me when I had put out my last update, like, "Oh, I thought Tovar would give him more of a push," and I was like, "You know, I thought I gave him a pretty good push. Like, we brought him inside the top 100. There's a pretty good crew of players that are inside the top 100." I guess I think I get a little bit more honed in on maybe the future projection than the now sometimes. And even to my own negative, or whatever you want to say it, like I try to be pretty self-reflective about stuff. I even have to look at myself sometimes, and this is what helps me push through it. And I hope everybody who analyzes anything whatsoever, especially from a prospect perspective or yourselves and how your valuation and blah, 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 is I look at myself and I go, well, I know I can be strict about not flying players up that are overaged at levels that I think, you know, they should dominate. Like, great. We're going to talk about a couple of those guys. Great. This 22-year-old is dominating A ball or high A. Cool. Cool. This 21-year-old is dominating A ball. Okay, great. This is what they should be doing. So I'm not going to go crazy like everybody else, or the inverse. You know, okay, this guy is not doing fantastic, but he's one of the youngest at this level. But this, in the same token, when I can use that as like a cooldown thing, the same I do when young players dominate levels. You've got to give those guys the big boost. And for some reason, I don't think I've quite given that to Tovar. And there's kind of a Andres Jimenez-ness to him from the minor leagues that I think I have, where, you know, that was a guy that dominated really, really early on, but then he hit a wall. And he hit the wall after he came to the AFL, which was interesting, where Tovar's doing the opposite. Came at a really young age, got challenged, played almost every single day, didn't do fantastic when he was here, looked a little overmatched, and now he is taking all of that and he's absolutely dominating, becoming one of the most valuable young players in the minor leagues. And, you know, the debates of who'd you rather, I think, are way more fascinating. That I think I'll save for another time and not try to press into this, because I do want to see a little bit more from Tovar. But I think you agree. I mean, the value, you know, let me, okay, I can't help myself. I'm ridiculous. I'm going to ask you one. Not me, though. I don't get to answer. Tovar or, oh, there's so many I want to ask you. Ezekiel Tovar or Matt McClain?
I'm going to give the edge to Tovar. Wow. 2 years younger, okay. At the same level.
Yeah, we're just touting Tovar. This is like, this has become the Prospect One GroupMe rooms. This is like a live, audible version of the GroupMe rooms. It's crazy that we're doing that. All right, let's jump into a couple more players. I actually mentioned him, and this is another one of those guys that I felt, this is why sometimes you kind of stick, and I stuck with when I think there's some bad. Specifically, I can tell you from personal experience, there was a Fangraphs report that really destroyed value on him. People were really upset about the Fangraphs report. I'm talking about Pico Armstrong, who has looked fantastic to start the season. 20 years old. He is at A-ball, missed some time last year, had a really good run before he got hurt. But he's at A-ball right now with one of the best WRC pluses, especially from an age perspective, hitting .378, four homers, eight stolen bases, 21 runs, sub 20% K percentage. He's got a double-digit walk percentage. He's clicking. His swing looks good. Power is always a weird projection. And a lot of people I know personally were just kind of pushing back because of a Fangraphs report on him, and still may come true, you know, 20 years old at A, he needs to be challenged a little bit, but I'm curious, massive success from Pete Crow Armstrong, and he definitely has a five toolness in him. It's would he click. How aggressive and how, if not impressed are you with Pete Crow Armstrong?
I am impressed. I mean, I do understand it's at A ball and he's 20. But he is the best at A-ball at 20 years old. So I expect him to get moved up soon. I kind of viewed him in a similar tier as Robert Hassel when they were being drafted. So, and I mean, Hassel's blown up, obviously. But if Pete Crow Armstrong hadn't got hurt last year, we might have seen a similar type of path. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with him. I do want to see it come to fruition at higher levels against more advanced pitching. But I think his hit tool is underrated. I think he can get into some level of power down the road, and he definitely has plus speed. So, and one thing that I think is underrated sometimes in fantasy is that he's like a double plus defender. So it's going to keep him in the lineup. It might even push him faster through the minor leagues because they want to get him his glove in center field too. So he's someone I'm high on. I view him as a buy right now. I mean, obviously, like I said, it needs to continue as he moves up, but I'm very encouraged by what I see.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What is this?
It's In This League.
What? How can we be expected to teach
Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh
to learn how to read if they can't even fit inside the building?
In This League
has to be at least three times bigger than this.
What's up, friends? Welcome back. End of hour two. It's Bogman and the Welsh, and that means I step away because in hour three, it is the Bubba, the Bogman. What's in store? What's going on with Bubba?
Actually, you know what? We haven't recorded it yet. Most of the time we record before you and I do this spot, but we have not yet. So I'm sure baseball, football, the normal stuff that we talk about. We'll get some golf in there because it's Bubba as well.
I kind of wish I could get, as somebody that enjoys the gambling and watches the gambling, I feel like golf is somewhere I would like to be. I feel like there's an edge to be had there, but there's so many different places. That's a good thing.
Did you know number two DFS behind football is golf?
You know, I think a general statement of you making it, like, sure, that is surprising, but I'm not that surprised because I feel like, is it, you mean the pure amount of people that play it or the money that's put in it? Or
I think it's the money that's put in it is.
Baseball is so tough in DFS. I think basketball is kind of the same way. Golf has just an ease to it where it's just like you pick a couple guys.
It's still weekly, like football. So you know what? You're probably right where it's like, you know, it goes over the last 3 days of the week, not every single day like baseball and basketball.
Yeah, and also like I think there's something with the information. The people that share the golf info have such an edge because it is more niche. Like golf DFS is niche to a public perspective that I think when people find somebody – they feel like they have an edge, and then the popularity is so much easier to consume that type of stuff, whether it's golf betting or golf DFS. It's not my thing. It's not something that I can get into because I'm just not a golf person. I'm not going to sit and watch it where I have talked myself into when I bet on hockey, like watching hockey. And that's not something I, you know, really get into. But golf is just a little beyond me, but they have an edge. You know, hockey has had an edge. That's the other thing of finding whether you're talking gambling or DFS. There's definitely been a major edge in hockey gambling, probably over baseball. I mean, baseball is such a freaking crapshoot. You know, the most popular thing now is the no run first inning type of stuff. And that is roulette at this point. That's all that it is. There's no real true science to it. On Wednesday, the Diamondbacks, Marlins, Merrill Kelly, and Alcantara looked like one of the greatest NRFIs you could do. And I bet it. And then Merrill Kelly gave up a homer to Joey Wendell in the first. So it's total crap shoot. So, all right, good stuff. I'm out of here. Bubba's coming in. Hour 3. It's Bubba and Bogman right here on In This League.